This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In the new book, Positively 4th Street, David Hadou tells the story of the 60s folk renaissance by telling the interconnected personal stories of four performers, Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, Mimi Baez Farinha, and Richard Farinha. Hadou is also the author of Lush Life, a biography of composer Billy Strayhorn. Bob Dylan and Joan Baez were at the forefront of the folk renaissance. Richard and Mimi Farinha were lesser known. Let's start with the Farinhas' recording, Pack Up Your Sorrows.
No use crying, talking to a stranger, naming the sorrow you've seen. Too many bad times, too many sad times, nobody knows what you mean. But if somehow you could pack up your sorrows and give them all to me, you would lose them. I know how to use them. Give them all to me. No use rambling, walking in the shadows, trailing a wandering star. No one beside you, no one to hide you, and nobody knows what you are. But if somehow you could pack up your sorrows and give them all to me, you would lose them. I know how to use them. Give them all to me.
Richard and Mimi Farinha recorded in 1965. Richard died in a motorcycle accident in 1966, coming home from a book signing, celebrating the publication of his first novel, Been Down So Long It Looks Like Up To Me. It was his wife Mimi's 21st birthday. I asked David Hadou to tell us more about the Farinhas.
Mimi was Joan's little sister, 4 years younger, also a guitarist and a singer, very talented guitarist, perhaps a better guitarist than Joan. Difference between them musically is that Mimi had marginal interest in being a public performer. Now, Richard Farinha, whom she married at a very tender age, was a colleague and competitor and friend of Dylan's, who was trying to do something similar to what Dylan ended up doing. In Richard's case, he was a writer, studied at Nabokov, at Cornell under Nabokov, was good friends with Thomas Pynchon in college, and set out to do a literature with a rock and roll sensibility, a little before Dylan set out to do rock and roll with a literary sensibility. And they all sort of came together in a sort of strange period in the 1960s.
How did Dylan and Joan Baez first meet, and at what point were they in their music careers when they did meet?
Well, it's interesting and largely forgotten today that Joan was a huge star and an important cultural force when Bob was largely unknown. They met literally on 4th Street, which recurs repeatedly in my book, which is why I named it one of the reasons I named it Positively 4th Street, at the hub of the folk scene, Gertie's Folk City, and Joan, being very well regarded and visiting New York at the time, was asked to sing. Bob sought her out and followed her out to the curb of Gertie's Folk City as she was leaving with her little sister, by the way, and said, "Oh, can I sing a song for you? I'm writing songs now. I want to sing a song for you. I wrote." And he bent down on one knee outside of Gertie's Folk City, and he sang, "Hey, hey, Woody Guthrie, I wrote you a song." And Joan thought, "Well, that was very nice. Well, bye-bye. We really must be going now." And she wasn't terribly impressed. Bob also made kind of an unseemly overture toward Mimi, Joan's little sister, on the same occasion. And I think for complicity of reasons, she wasn't especially enamored of Bob originally. It was a little later when he started writing songs of social consciousness, and they were at a party together, and she heard him playing With God on Our Side for some friends, when she realized that he was something special. It was the depth and the originality of his early compositions. And she was quite early in recognizing that Dylan was doing something special.
What did Joan Baez do for Bob Dylan's career?
Joan Baez gave Bob Dylan his start. She gave him her audience. She transferred her fame to him. She brought him along on her early tours, unbilled and largely unknown, and turned over the stage for the second half of her shows to him. She would brought this unknown guy out, and she would have to lecture her audiences who didn't particularly like him at first. He was doing a very, very different kind of thing. His voice was considered strange at the time. He was writing a different kind of music. His guitar playing was unconventional. Audiences would talk and sometimes boo a little bit, and she would have to come out and lecture them and say, "Listen to him. He's doing something different. Give him a chance." And that was the beginning of Bob's national exposure.
And Joan Baez and Bob Dylan were lovers at the time?
They fell in love very soon after he came to California and started writing in her house. And it was a very complex relationship and elementally flawed as a romance because of the clash of egos involved. Someone said that they broke up eventually because they couldn't decide whose last name to give the children. I mean, they were two very strong people, but deeply attracted to each other and respectful of each other's accomplishments.
Although Joan Baez introduced Bob Dylan to her audience when she was more famous than he was, he didn't return the favor when he became famous and toured England. She had hoped that he would introduce her to his audience, and that didn't happen. What was going on between the two of them then?
From a careerist or a business point of view, it might have been nice for Bob to invite Joan onto the stage. Her fame was beginning to wane. She was losing her audience. Bob's audience was growing. He was on the ascent. From a musical point of view, from a creative point of view, it made very little sense for the two of them to be together anymore. And Bob recognized that before Joan caught on. I mean, by 64, 65, Bob was no longer doing traditional folk music or music of social consciousness. He was writing in a pop vein, and he was writing very internal, probing and poetic music that was nothing like the increasingly political and sometimes strident music that Joan was doing at that time.
My guest is David Heydu, author of the new book Positively Fourth Street. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is David Heydu. He's the author of the new book Positively Fourth Street, The Lives and Times of Joan Baez, Bob Dylan, Mimi Baez Farina, and Richard Farina. Let's bring Richard Farina into the picture. Farina and Dylan had several things in common. One of them was that they liked to tell fictional stories about their early life. Let's start with Dylan, whose story is more famous by now. But what are some of the stories that were untrue that he told people when he first arrived on the Greenwich Village music scene?
Practically everything Dylan said since high school was untrue. You know, he originally created a whole new persona for himself while he was still in high school. He created another character named Elston Gunn, who was a rock and roll piano player, and he dropped the name Bob Zimmerman then, he was just a teenager, started wearing pink shirts and bow ties and wearing a leather jacket, and you could see him kind of appropriating the pop culture sources around him. He took Gunn from Peter Gunn, right? And then when rock and roll started to wane in popularity in the late 50s and folk started to emerge as the new, smart, cool, hip music, the music that was happening, he dropped his first created persona and invented another one, Bob Dylan, this time based on another TV character, Matt Dillon from the Gunsmoke series. And he started telling stories that reinforced this new image that he worked in a car, that he was a carnival barker, that he rode the rails, that he was an orphan, that he was part American Indian, that he had an uncle who was a professional gambler, and you know, he's all kinds of you know, fanciful tales that portrayed him as a mysterious figure of the road.
And what are some of the things Richard Farina said about his past that were untrue?
Well, if it's at all possible to imagine this, Richard Farina outclassed Dylan as a myth maker. He used to say that that he ran guns for Castro in Cuba, that he was a member of the he worked for the IRA, and he used to claim that he had to sleep with a loaded 45 under his pillow. He used to say that he couldn't fly because he had a metal plate in his head, and if he flew, his head might explode. But with Richard Farina, it was always an awareness that it was a grand charade, and an invitation to join in and take part of it.
So what was Farina's real story?
Farina's real story is about as mundane as Bob Dylan's. He was born and raised in Brooklyn and attended Brooklyn Technical High School, was a star student, quite bright, nose to the grindstone. And it was at Cornell that he started becoming a bit of a Heathcliff character.
Richard Farina became lovers and then the husband of Mimi Baez, Joan's younger sister. And you seem to think that Farina maybe married her in part for musical reasons, too. That she was the sister of a famous woman. She sang and could help round out his performance. Am I giving an accurate interpretation of your reading of this?
Well, Richard was boundlessly ambitious. He was over-absorbed with Mimi's being a Baez and being part of the illustrious Baez family. After he and Mimi agreed to marry, he bumped into Cornell, former teacher of his from Cornell, the novelist Herbert Gold, at the American Express office in Paris, and he yelled across the room to Herb, "Hey, Herb, guess what? I'm going to marry Joan Baez's sister." Well, that said, although that was clearly a component of his attraction to Mimi, everyone who met Mimi Baez was attracted to Mimi Baez, not just physically, but she was a very warm and loving person and a bright person. When they did come together and develop a relationship, it became more than just kind of a simplistic, you know, Machiavellian thing. It became largely, you know, symbiotic, and she contributed mightily to his development as a musician. And if it weren't for Mimi and her knowledge of music theory and her understanding of chords and her own creativity, Richard Farina would never have emerged as a half-decent songwriter as he did. He would never have had the moderately successful career as half of a performing folk duo that he did with Mimi.
Let's say something about the dynamic between this foursome when they were together. Joan Baez, Bob Dylan, Mimi Farina, and Richard Farina.
Yeah. The four of them came together quite a bit in California. They lived next to each other. And for a while, in 1964, they all lived together in a house for a summer. Thomas Pynchon said it certainly was a nest of vipers, wasn't it? It was a little bit more than that, but there was a lot of competitive inspiration as well as, you know, sheer rivalry. But Farina egged Dylan on as a writer. They were both in a race to complete their books. They both had intended to have their books published in 1966. And Mimi and Joan, like all sisters, were always intensely rivalrous. And the sexual dynamic of the four of them just made this horribly complicated. To make it as simple as I can, and it's not easy, Bob was always attracted to Mimi first. I mean, when Bob met Joan, it was in Mimi's company, and he always had a crush on Mimi. Richard seemed to have had his eye on Joan all along, and by 1965 had wormed his way into Joan's career and was producing a record for her and writing music for her and beginning to talk about a whole series of other projects with her.
Some of the research that you did for your new book is very interesting. For example, you communicated with the writer Thomas Pynchon, the reclusive writer who never talks to the press. He had been Richard Farina's college roommate at Cornell and best man at Farina's wedding with Mimi. How did you manage to talk with him? Or communicate with him might be the better word.
Thomas Pynchon was one of many people who Richard Farina influenced very deeply, and one of many people who considered Richard Farina his best friend. You know, it just says something about the kind of person Richard Farina was. I mean, a fount of ideas, full of life, inspired a number of people around him, including the other people who were the core subjects of my book. And he was best friends with Pynchon in college. Pynchon was the best man at Farina's wedding to Mimi, and then the pallbearer at Richard's funeral. I wish I had a colorful anecdote about, you know, Pynchon's coming out of, you know, seclusion to talk to me. I really had nothing to do with me, I'm convinced. I submitted some questions to him, you know, formally through his publisher, expected them to disappear into the ether, and was quite shocked when he responded by fax. And after that, there was some back and forth and exchange of some letters, and he couldn't have been more helpful. He answered everything I asked, was charming and illuminating. I'm convinced that Pynchon's affection for this person, Farina, and was such that he thought it important to help tell Farina's story. I think he thought that Farina's story is a story that needs to be told, and even if he had to, you know, come out of his hole to pitch in, well, it was worth doing.
I think people are pretty much able to keep up with what Bob Dylan has been doing musically, particularly because he had his 60th birthday recently. He was very much in the news. What about Joan Baez and Mimi Farina?
Mimi essentially gave up public performing about 30 years ago to shift her focus to public service, and she started an organization called Bread and Roses in the San Francisco Bay Area, devoted to bringing music and other entertainment to shut-ins, hospital patients, prisoners, and such. And it's now an enormous organization, an influential one with branches all around the country. That's been Mimi's focus. She's very well known in social service circles around the country, entirely apart from her early work in music. And she's quite ill at the moment with cancer. And as a result, her big sister, Joan, has stopped touring for the foreseeable future to be at Mimi's side. In fact, the entire Baez family is at Mimi's side in Mill Valley while Mimi fights quite serious cancer.
Well, David Haidu, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you. I had a great time.
David Haidu is the author of Positively Fourth Street. This is Fresh Air.